The following is an interview by Patrick Huber with Paul Hun at the Deluxe Barbershop in downtown Mebane, North Carolina on July 5th, 1995. The following interview is being conducted for the Southern Oral History Program and is part of its Oral History of the White Furniture Company of Mebane project. I thought, Mr. Hun, that we would start out today by having you tell us a little bit about where and when you were born and what your folks did for a living and if you had any brothers and sisters.
I was born in Alamance County in the 6 month, the 29th day of 1939. I don't have any brothers and sisters. But my father worked at Cherokee Flooring Company in Burlington. I had a cousin that cut hair here in Mebane, and so that's what inspired me to go to barber school. So I came to work for his son. So out of the family, out of the Hunter family, cutting hair here in Mebane, we probably, it's been cutting hair here about approximately maybe 90-some years. Because mm-hmm. my cousin cut for 54 years, and I've been here about 36 years. So during that time, between the family, we saw quite a few people go and come out of Mebane.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Where did you go to barber school?
I went to barber school in Raleigh, Harrison's Barber College in Raleigh.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was 1959.
Mm-hmm. Well, what were your general impressions of the White Furniture Company?
Well, when I came to Mebane, White's Furniture Factory was one of the biggest places for most of the people to get haircuts in there. In the barbershop was worked at White's.
Mm-hmm.
And, so during that time, that was just about the way of livelihood was through White's. And I can always remember the times when it got to close to Christmas, most of all the employees got real excited over the big bonus that White used to give
mm-hmm.
back through those years, and so it was just a matter of a person's livelihood had to come through White's, and a lot of it, you know, because it was only White's, Kingsdown, and the yarn mill was about the only employees here,
mm-hmm.
like crafted.
Were there any other big employers in town?
At that time, it was. Those were about the only four places that was here to work at. They worked a big number of people.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the fathers and the sons all worked at White's, or either crafty. I had quite a few customers at that time. It was all the White fathers and sons.
Mm-hmm. Do you remember any, you knew a lot of them by first name?
Yeah, quite a few of them. I had Mr. Miller and Mr. Rice, and his son Don, and Mr. Solomon, Robert Solomon, his son, Frankie, that was all family employed. Quite a few people that worked out in the rural area that didn't live in Mebane that worked at White's too. The Porterfields, the Beavers. Durham. Just quite a few of them cut their hair.
Mm-hmm. Was back when you came to Mebane, was White's considered a good place to work?
At that time, it was. And, work was good. They made good quality of furniture at the time when I came here. And, you know, the thing that I seen the difference in as the years went on was the thing that people, the older people were so they enjoyed doing what they were doing, and and they enjoyed the work that they turned out, because they even could boast about the quality of the work that they put out, you know. Of course, it's always been a high price of furniture, but at that time it was all good solid furniture. And of course, that was under the leadership of Mr. Steve White and Steve Milliner and Mr. Bean, Farney Bean, I think his name was. He was a plant manager, I guess, and then they had a superintendent, Mr. Self. But those people, of course, that worked under them, they just they had more authority than the next generation that come along. So the work was, the quality of the work was much better, and people did a much better job. So as the time passed on, Mr. Milliner's son, Charlie, was working and working in the plant with them, and then, of course, Sam was there, Sam White was there, and they made him president, and then Bernie Bean, the son of Mr. Barney Bean, ended up being the plant manager. And of course, in my opinion, what I saw the difference with under the leadership was just like a communication with each individual out there as the generation, you know, changed from in the authority to really get the work out of the people, because
they weren't as good as that, as the older generation.
They may, you know, I think maybe Bernie knew the work, Bernie Bean did, but he just didn't have quite the authority that his daddy had to push the employers. And so, you know, when you go see things like that happen, the employers would get to the point that they didn't do the work as much, or they would slack up and do just what they had to do. And so that started killing quality of some of the work. And of course, Sam White was a very fine man as far as individual talking to him and everything, but then he didn't have quite as much personal contact with the employees as Charlie Milliner, the vice president, which was there working with them, you know, kind of like hand to hand, you know. And so I feel like that made some difference too, because most of the time, I always felt from listening at the employees that a lot of them had quite a lot of respect for the people that come direct and talk to them. You know? They just come up and personally have a personal conversation with them. And it made quite a lot of difference, I'm sure, in the quality of work that they turned out there. So I don't recall exactly. It seemed like it was, I don't know whether it was 2 years or 3 years. It wasn't too long after the change of the family leadership that the company was selling out. And quite, of course, the people that they sold out to was, were mostly investors. And so I had an opportunity to meet the president and the plant managers and cut most some of their... Some of the, you know, because most of their hair too. Some of them. And they, you know, not knowing and not realizing that during the times that they needed people to work and keep the good employment, it made a difference there, because they had an idea of turning out so much work, and regardless of who did it, they didn't come and fall in love. Love, not as a love family like the old generation of the white did, you know. They just kind of got to be family to each other. So. And it's quite natural that made, from what I could talk and get the understanding out of the employers, that it caused them not to really care the type of work that they put out or anything, because they felt like they didn't appreciate it as much. So that's the only thing I could see in the falling, mostly of the factory. But for a number of years that I was here, that factory was feeding families and building homes for families and educating children. And so it looked like it kind of just faded away from that, you know.
Did the whites come in and the beans come in and get their haircut here?
Most of them went to the Hope Man which was a part of my cousin. They were brother-in-laws that opened up the barbershop here in the beginning. Beam now, Sam White got his hair cut here, and Charlie the Milliner got his hair cut here, and I had cut Bernice Beam's hair, and so most of them got the hair cut at with Mr. Hope, which was really a part of the family too. He was at a different shop, but I had opportunity to know him. I knew Mr. Seth that used to be the superintendent in there, so I knew him. Most of the supervisors I knew, Mr. Rice and Mr. Durham and Mr. Westbrook and Mr. Clayton and Mills, Ralph Mills, most of the supervisors. I've cut quite a few of them. Quite a few of the supervisors and quite a few of the employees. I had opportunity to see the difference in the older supervisors and the chance to see the new ones too.
The new ones when the new company came in?
Yeah.
What were the differences?
Well, the difference was I felt was just a matter of not having the close relationship that the other people kind of grew up with, you know, the employers and the supervision that grew up working in the plant and worked into being a supervisor. They quite naturally was a lot closer to the employers than the new people that took over. They come in from somewhere else that didn't know anybody, family-wise and all, you know. I say this much about the old whites' ownership and the management and all. They cared enough about families. If they were sick, they were making sure that they were taken care of, because they appreciated at that time good quality employees. But it's the new company that took over was, by like a lot of the other new companies now, the bottom line is the dollar sign. They don't really get that close. I don't know. They don't really have that love that much for the employees as the old ones did through the years of most of any company, I guess, where it used to be a long time ago.
You don't think they were as concerned about the community of Medlin either?
I don't think they were that much concerned about the future of White's Furniture Factory. I think the whole idea was to buy that name and to get to the point that they could move the company back to a place where the wages was a lot different, a lot lower than they were in this area. Because the wage area, you know, got a little high in this area after GE and DKN, maybe Package and those companies moved in. And you had a lot of people were traveling to the Research Triangle where they got better paying jobs. And so I think they had one thing in mind, was to buy the name of Whites so they'd have that high price furniture and then tie it in with Hickory, as they did. And then they moved everything back to Hickory. And I'm not aware of very many employees moving up there. I'm aware of one of the managers. One of them was in manager. He was a designer, so he moved back up to Hickory with them. And, as far as the some of them in the office was already in, I believe it was High Point, where they got the central office, or where they do most of that out of. I think it's out of High Point. As far as any of the other employees, I don't recall any of people that was with the Whites really moving up to Hickory with them.
Do you remember when this new company came in, what the workers were saying who would come in here and get their hair cut?
Well, they were saying about the base, about what I just basically told you, that they didn't feel like it'd be long that they'd have a job. Because they had the same feeling that I had, that these people come in and bought it. The first thing they were doing, they were moving out some of the older management, that Sarah was up there, moving in their own people. And they could see the quality of changing in the furniture and how fast they wanted it out. So it caused a lot of the older employees to really get the point that they didn't want, you know, they just didn't care about their job because they felt like they wasn't going to have a job long. And so that's what mostly took place, and that's what really happened.
Do you know of any of the older workers leaving there when the company
when
came in?
When the time comes? Yeah, I know about 50 that left shortly after the new company moved in, you know. It's quite natural, you know, they come in and see a lot of people that they didn't need, so they just move them out before, you know, right off on the start. Other than that, you know, that's just with some of the employees' attitude towards companies. Not like, just about like any other company. When somebody comes in and buys out, they don't feel like they're going to be with the company long. Lost the, some other people that have been there probably 35 and 40 years, or some of them even longer than that.
What were the new supervisors like who came in?
Well, most of them, you know, were, you know, personally good people, you know, could listen at them and talking to them in the barbershop here, you know. But they had a job to do to turn out. They had a certain amount of furniture that they had to turn out, and so, you know, they had to get it out. And that was just kind of pushed down, and that's the only thing they could do. So they had to push people to get it out. They had to push them to get it out. And so sometimes, you know, they maybe didn't look quite as far into the type of quality that they was pushing out as it was years ago. Of course, you know, when you, as the time goes on, the pace goes on too, you know. So you either got to keep up with the times or else get out of it in a hurry too, you know. So I think that's what was just took place in that order. They came in, they really seen they had to turn out a certain number of furniture or amount of furniture, and of course they had to keep the overhead down as long, you know, along with it, you know. But far as even down to president, they came here and plant managers and a lot of the supervisors, and I cut a lot of them's head. They all seemed to be, to me, very, you know, good people. I had no problem with along with them at all. And I don't know of how many of those people that were here then is still with the company. I'm not sure if there's very many of them still with the company that when they first came here. Some of them might still be in the office part up there. The Robertson fellow, I think he was kind of over the financial part of it up there. He's, as far as I know, he's still up at the office. Richard Hinkle and some of the other people that's not with that company anymore.
Do you remember rumors going around town that the place was going to close up?
Well, you know, when somebody buys a company out right after the start, the first thing some of the older here, they get, you know, people have been there a long time, they start seeing some changes. Maybe the changes that needed to be changed, they already, you know, well, it's not going to last long. We're not going So it was quite a few of that going on. We're not going to have a job long. We're not going to have a job. And I guess they were there probably, I may be wrong in my timing, but I would say probably maybe 5 years that they were there. May even been longer than that before they moved the plant to Heat Creek. Still yet, like I said, it was a lot of people that had been with whites a long time didn't have a job after that because, you know, it's not easy for people working and living in a small town to just jump up and move that far to Heat Creek. Mm-hmm. Just to keep employed. Some of them just had a good job some other place, and some of them retired.
Had you heard anything about that Mercedes-Benz plane that was supposed to come here?
Yeah, I heard about it, and shortly after they had talked about cutting it. So, you know, it was real. They had kind of kept everything quiet, and so, you know, I was the last person who was going to say something about it. They wanted to keep it quiet, although I knew about it coming. So, but, you know, I think the difference, they still said to the, on down to the last, this was the best location for the Mercedes plant.
But mm-hmm.
I think with all that Alabama, the state of Alabama, give them, they just about couldn't turn that down. Since North Carolina didn't offer them much. But, and I'm glad they didn't. But, I don't know where it would made such a tremendous difference in this area. I'm sure it would have had a lot of effect on it. It would have brought more people in. And, so, you know, if you got to grow, you got to grow. You grow with everything. Crime mm-hmm. rates and all works, everything, you know. High cost of property taxes and everything else that goes with it. So, you can't stand still. You don't have something here for the youth as they grow up. They have to go somewhere else to work.
Have you seen a lot of that?
Yeah,
younger
I've seen
people?
Quite a lot of young people that I give first haircuts to. I see them when they come back to visit.
Uh-huh. Where do they go to? Where are their best areas?
Well, a lot of them went out of state and to work, and then some of them was. In the area of Research Triangle.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them in the Western Salem area, Greensboro area. But a whole lot of them is out of state. It just, you know, it just wasn't that much to offer here. Well, personally, when they came out of high school and went to college, got out of college, there wasn't that much to offer in this area. But it seemed to be taking future seems to be like they're going to work for. They might be able to keep some of the youth around here
mm-hmm.
and get enough quality employment here.
How did the plant closing down affect your business here?
Well, I lost quite a number of the new management that were here because they had to relocate. But as far as the help that was down, you know, the employees that were there, a lot of them is still in the area. They're working somewhere else, but they're still in the area.
Mm-hmm.
And it was quite a few of them that I had customers that were able to retire. So they still in the area. So. But, you know, you see some difference. And I was a little bit fortunate than others that I had quite a few of them at the time of age. So hopefully maybe I can get retired by the time they get to where they can't come get a haircut. I would say most of the new management here, I don't see it, but just a few of them still in the area.
A couple of guys who I talked to said that they used to, when the White family had it, they could come down off of work, get a haircut with people come down during the middle of the afternoon, get a cut.
Well, it was some of the management. Now, when whites was first, when the older whites that owned it, you know, they had a break time, but when many haircuts during break, they got a haircut a lot of time during lunchtime because they had an hour for lunch.
Mm-hmm.
But as the next generation took over, it, yeah, Some of them would just walk out of there and come out and get a haircut because they were able to get by with it, you know.
Uh-huh.
And so, like I said, that was a lot of whites' downfall, too, you know. There just wasn't enough authority in the next generation that come along to get the work out of people.
Uh-huh.
So let them get by with it. Not that they wasn't good people or anything. It was just a lack of that authority of being able to get the best out of the employees or the best for the company. Just wasn't there. And if you have people that you paying and them on the streets, then you've got to go in the hole.
Mm-hmm.
No way to go.
Is that why you think they had to sell the place?
Well, I felt that it was a whole lot of it was because of the management of the second generation, I'll put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just a matter of the authority, of not having authority to get the work out and keep the overhead down.
Mm-hmm. So you think they went in debt in a hole because of the way it was
run? I wouldn't say they weren't dead. I'd say they lost money.
Mm-hmm.
They lost money. I know they lost money 2 years ago.
Right before they sold it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true.
Did that surprise a lot of people in town that
that they were selling out?
Yeah.
Yeah, they did. They just said they never thought they'd ever see the day to come that the family wouldn't own White's Furniture Factory down there, somebody in the line. But it's a possibility if it had been under the full leadership of Charlie, if he had been maybe president, and by being out there and close contact with the employers, and it might have been something different. I'm not saying that it would have been, but it could have been.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that to the fact that the president, Sam White, wasn't a fine man, because he was a very fine gentleman. And just like Bernie Dean, he was a fine fellow, but being fine and getting the work done is kind of not two different things.
Mm-hmm.
So if you don't get to, if you're not making any money being fine, don't help you very much. Not far as keeping the company going.
Well, when would most workers then come in and get their hair cut?
Most of them would come in during the lunchtime, they had an hour for lunch, and you'd get a lot of them during that time. Shortly after the plant closed in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm. What would a lot be, say, during lunch hour?
Well, most of them during lunch hour would be mostly talking about, sometime the quality of the furniture was going out. But it was just a difference. You could see a difference in the people at that time when they come in. They had a little bit more sense of assuring of having a job as it changed. As the leadership changed over from the fathers to the sons, you could tell that they could see that the company was going down. Even down the employees could see that.
Mm-hmm. Do you think the workers weren't as happy?
No, they weren't as happy.
They complained more?
Well, they were a little uneasy.
Uh-huh.
And of course, quite natural, when the other company came in and bought it out, when Heath bought it out, they were a whole lot uneasy, especially a lot of the older people there, because they just felt they were going to be without a job,
mm-hmm.
sooner or later, and sooner or later they were.
So how many would come in, say, over a lunch hour? What would be a lot of
people?
Well,
most of the time, if I cut four by being course, a lot of time during that time, I'd been in a shop where it was three barbers in, and so he would, you might get quite a few of men during lunchtime. But as an individual barber, if you cut four during time that they were out for lunch, you were doing good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so, as just one barber. But most of the shops down here at that time had three barbers in most of the shops, and it was four on this street at one time, and two of them had two shops, and had two in the shop. Well, it ended up being two barbers in each shop when it was four on this street, and I think it was three in the shop around on Front Street. So at one time it was five barber shops here. Now it's only two,
mm-hmm.
and a barber in each shop.
So they would come in and sit around, wait for their haircut,
oh, yeah,
and
yeah.
tell stories.
A
and
lot
talk.
Of them, if, even down if they weren't getting a haircut, would come by and sit down and talk. And during that time, especially during the time that the farmers were bringing watermelons and stuff in, they'd bring me some watermelons by, and a lot of times some of those employees would come up and cut my watermelon. And I might get a slice out of it, and I might not.
Any other stuff? Did they play checkers or stuff
here? No, never had a checkerboard in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think most of the checker game in maybe at that time was at a service station down by the Ford dealership down there. The Rice Brothers was running a service station down there. A lot of them would run in there and get a checker game going. A lot of them spent time in the hardware down here doing their lunchtime. Then you had quite a few of them after the second management spent time in the pool rooms and in the bar. So quite naturally that was going to cut out on some kind of some of the quality of punishment too.
One of the guys told me that if you wanted to know anything about the company, you needed to come down here to this barbershop.
Come down to this bar. Well, I'm not so sure about that. Even down after you, after all I had to tell you, might not have been a whole lot. But, you know, I had a pretty close relationship with most of the employers down there. My wife's and all kind of had a real good friendship base, along with the haircuts and all, too. We got along real well. I don't know where you could find that a whole lot or not.
Mm-hmm.
If you were here.
One guy told me that had a joke about when you used to walk by when the white company owned the place, you could hear the saws going murr, murr, murr. And when Hickory bought it out, you walk by them and they go yip, 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 yip. Do you remember that?
I remember telling some of them, like, I think what brought that about was because of the fact that I told them I didn't see them up and down the streets quite as often as I used to when they were down after the second generation of the whites took over.
Uh-huh.
I said, I seen you on the streets a lot, and I said, you can go by the plant and you hear the saws in a lower gear. I said, and as the new company bought it out, I said, and then the saws were saying, zip, zip. So, made a difference. It put some of them to work that had been loafing for a few years, and then it put some of them out of work. Some of them lost jobs that wasn't working. But I didn't see as many of them on the street, walking up and down the streets after the Hickory took over.
Mm-hmm. Could you get a
stayed on the job.
Uh-huh. Could you get a sense of who the slackers were?
Oh, yeah. I knew most of them.
Mm-hmm. Just by local reputation?
Yeah. But, you know, in any company you go in, most of the time you're going to have a certain few people that's going to go in there to see how much work they can get out of doing.
Sure.
They go tipping who they are.
It's okay. Do you remember any other sort of stories or jokes like that from the years that workers used to tell?
Well, I don't know. It was so much was told during that time. Some of it you remembered and some of it you didn't.
What was that place like at closing time when the whistle blew?
It was about like a madhouse. Everybody was trying to get out of there, either to get to the barbershop or go home or something, or get to the pool room or someplace. It was, the traffic's a lot different out there when since the whites closed down. I used to think we was at a drag strip sometime when they'd come up through here after they got off from work. But it's a lot different there at 4 o'clock. Yeah, I used to tease some of them, and they'd be up here so quick after the whistle went off. I said, I just don't believe you've done any work. I said, anybody could move that fast and could be up here in the whistle just blow you up here this fast, you know.
Did a lot of them come in on Saturdays?
Yeah, some of them, a lot of them on Saturdays. But most of them would try to get in after they got off of work or during lunchtime. You get some on Saturdays too.
How do you think the, you talked a little bit about how it's affected your business. How do you think the closing affected the downtown of Mebane?
Well, quite naturally, you know, when you take any company that's been in town a long time and in the area for a long time and close it down, and then you're going to lose the constantly faces all the time that you see every day. You're just not going to see them every day. Even in the shop here, I can see people that used to get haircuts on every 2 weeks basis because they were working at White's, and I see them once a month or once every 2 months now. You know, it's just how the difference has changed.
Do you think it hurt a lot of other businesses in the area?
It probably hurt some, you know. When you take a number of people out of the plant, you know, White's had quite a number of people working for them. You take all those people out, and they had to relocate. Even down at maybe the new people that was here under the new company, and most of those people were wasn't retirement people, you know, they come in special to manage. And they had to relocate. Well, most of the time when you see some of them, it's just simple because they're in the area, you know. Because some of them probably, you know, built here and still live here, but most of them are working out of town. So when you take those people out of town, work somewhere else. A lot of time they do the shopping somewhere else too, and whatever they got to do. Nobody has a lot of time to wait anymore. You have to make good of what time it is. So it's made a difference in the business part of the town. Especially during lunchtime when White's was open, you could see the stores being busy and all during that time. That it's just not there anymore.
I was going to ask you if you had any relatives or really close friends who worked there at the company?
At the company, I had quite a lot of close friends that worked there. Didn't have any relatives that worked there at White's, because the relatives that I had in Mebane, I live in Grant now, but I've worked here since 1959. And the relatives that I had here in Mebane were already in the barbershop, so they, so as far as having any of them, working at White's, I didn't have any relatives that worked at White's. quite a lot of good friends. So.
Mm-hmm.
You won't really need it.
Yeah, I also wanted to ask you how the workers were regarded by the townspeople. I know in like textile mills, sometimes they were looked down upon by others who didn't work in the mills. Was there anything like that?
I don't think whites had that much problem. Whites furniture had that kind of problem, because one thing, back even now when I first came here, in maybe they weren't paying that much far as hourly wages, you know, but they paid some big bonuses, you know, Christmas bonus and vacation bonus. They got some big bonus in there, you know. So honest people that really could maybe look down on whites at that time, anyway, people that went to work at Western Electric in Burlington, and some of those same people, they went to work up there, had one time worked at White's, a lot of them.
Mm-hmm.
But as far as the town commissioners, or people like that, because one of the people from down at White's was on the board at, for the town of Mabin, was on the board of commissioners. That was Mr. Sell. And he spent a lot of time on that. As a matter of fact, when I first came to Mabin, it was one from Dixie Yarn and one from Kingsdown and one from White were all over the board.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a feeling I could be wrong in my thinking. I felt that a lot of times that other employment that would have probably come into town didn't get an opportunity to, because they didn't let that much come into town, maybe.
Oh, really?
Simply because of the fact that maybe the fear of losing employers or maybe having to pay higher wages.
Mm-hmm.
But as the Alamance Orange water system came through and they were able to get water, and then they started billing on the outside of town. A lot of companies like GE and Dan Rivers, a lot of those places built out Mabin Package, they all built out after that Alamance Orange water system came through. So, and since then, it's just steadily been growing, because they got different people on the board that really start caring about the growth of Mabin.
Mm-hmm. You were talking about the bonuses. Did you have any idea how big they were?
I know some of them to have is, and you're talking about the late 50s, which meant a lot to some people back then to get a bonus of $800 or $900
mm-hmm.
at Christmas time, you know, because a lot of families just, they didn't have any Christmas until that
mm-hmm.
bonus was there for them, you know. They had to plan their Christmas after the bonus that they were going to get from White, you know, especially they had large families. And even down to people that hadn't been there that long during the time for Christmas probably got as much as $200 or $300 for Christmas bonuses. No. Fine, how you doing? Have a seat.
I was wondering if there was anything else that you wanted to say. You answered all of my questions.
Yeah, well, I just hope it was some help to you some way or another in the book, and I wish you good luck with it.
Oh, yeah, well, thank you. I appreciate you doing the interview.